Hi again, everybody. I'm Dan Hoard, and this is the Bengals Booth Podcast, the Ready for Primetime Players Edition. As we look back at the Bengals' 34-23 win over the Baltimore Ravens on Thursday Night Football, giving the Bengals a 2-0 record and sole possession of first place in the AFC North. Coming up, you'll hear radio replays from the win, locker room interviews with the key players, and Dave Lapham will join me for post-game analysis. Plus, in this week's Fun Facts interview, I'll talk to Bengals president Mike Brown about a wide variety of topics, ranging from his friendship with Marty Brenneman to the time he went to see the movie Porky's with Forrest Gregg. That is a true story. All of that is straight ahead, but first, here's a quick reminder that you can have the latest edition of this podcast delivered right to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean. It's the greatest invention since the flash drive. The ability to store a ton of information on a little stick that's about 2 inches long is truly a remarkable thing. Now let's get to the game. The Baltimore Ravens looked positively frightening in Week 1 when they throttled the Buffalo Bills 47-3. Quarterback Joe Flacco began his 11th NFL season by throwing 3 touchdown passes and exiting the game when the score was 40-0 in the third quarter. But that was against the Bills. The Bengals are a different story. Going into Thursday night's game, Flacco had thrown 23 career interceptions against Cincinnati. That's 11 more than he had thrown against any other opponent. And the number grew on the Ravens' second possession.
Flacco back to throw. His pass intercepted.
Yeah.
Sean Williams, or is it Jesse Bates? It's picked off and run down to the 16. Jesse Bates with his first career interception, an overthrow from Joe Flacco, and the Bengals will take over at the Ravens' 16-yard line.
And the Bengals promptly capitalized on the opportunity to start a drive in the red zone.
Dalton fakes a pitch to the left, rolls out to the right.
Got him.
Throws into the back corner of the end zone. Touchdown, Bengals!
Nice.
Adriel Jeremiah Green with his second touchdown in as many weeks.
That made it 7-0, and the Bengals were just getting warmed up. On their next possession, they marched 80 yards in 5 plays to score again.
Dalton will throw it on 3rd-and-1. His pass
nice.
Caught in traffic.
Nice.
DJ Green
Go
breaks
Green.
The tackle.
Go
streaking
Green.
Toward Woo. The end zone.
Yeah.
Touchdown! Yeah. Bengals as AJ Green broke a tackle about 2 yards downfield and then opened up the long, graceful strides to take it into the end zone for his second touchdown catch of the first quarter. It goes 32 yards.
Nice read by Andy Dalton. Blitz again. Got the ball out quickly. Tavon Young missed the tackle.
That made it 14-0 in the first quarter against a defense that did not allow a first down in the first half last week. Here's Tyler Eifert.
Their defense is a really good unit. They have a lot of good players, and then just the different things that they throw at you is, it's sometimes hard to deal with. So to be able to handle that on a short week and to get off to the start that we did was really good for us.
The next time the Bengals got the ball, they lost a starter on offense as rookie center Billy Price left the game with an ankle injury. That meant Trey Hopkins had to take over. He's practiced at center and appeared in preseason games at center, but had never played the position in a real game.
It was a first. It was a first. And, I mean, I hate to see Billy go down, but it was exciting, and it was good to get out there with my guys.
He did great. I mean, for him to fill in like that, he played really well. I thought the communication was great up front. For him to be making all the calls and everything that he did, I mean, we've got a smart group up there.
That was obviously the voice of Andy Dalton, and with Hopkins in the game, the Bengals offense didn't skip a beat.
Shotgun snap. Dalton in the pocket. Throws it toward the left side of the end
zone.
Caught for a Bengals touchdown. AJ Green for the first time in his magnificent NFL career has 3 touchdowns in a game, and it's only 2 minutes into the second quarter.
AJ Green got up calmly, gave the ball to the official, and put 3 fingers in the air. Those 3 touchdowns happened quickly. Andy Dalton to A.J. Green has been magic tonight.
It was 21-0 Bengals early in the second quarter. A.J. Green now has 61 career touchdown catches and ranks third on the Bengals' all-time list, two behind Carl Pickens and just five behind Chad Johnson. Here's Tyler Boyd on his remarkable teammate.
That's exciting to watch. You know, I love watching him play. You know, he was one of the best. He is probably the best receiver in his league to me, you know, because I watch him practice every day. And his guys run a league, after they get paid, they just don't want to work no more. I see him come out here and work every day, never take practices off. So that, to me, is the best receiver in the league.
Baltimore finally got on the board on a one-yard touchdown run by Buck Allen to make it 21-7. But the Bengals immediately counterpunched with a 12-play, 78-yard drive to find the end zone again.
Now throws over the middle, caught at the 10-yard line. Boyd breaks through a tackle and takes it into the end zone. Andy Dalton's fourth touchdown pass of the first half, and the Bengals have restored a 3-touchdown lead.
So much for Andy Dalton struggling in primetime. He threw for 265 yards with 4 touchdowns, no interceptions, and a passer rating of 107.7 in a short week against a great defense.
They're a really good defense, and they think they finished at the top of the league for a long time. And so, to be able to do that against them, it shows we're doing some things right. And, you know, I feel like we left some stuff out there too. But, I feel really good about the way we played tonight.
Dalton was so good at deciphering the Ravens' blitzes that Baltimore stopped sending them in the first half. Here's Eifert on his quarterback.
You know, Andy's played against them twice a year for a long time, so he's familiar with what they like to do, and so I think that helps when we got an experienced guy like that at quarterback, getting us into the right plays and into the right protections.
It was 28-7 late in the first half and looked like it might be a blowout, but the Ravens had other ideas.
Third down and goal inside the one. Flacco being chased, gets away from a hit, throws to the goal line. Touchdown, Ravens, as he connects with rookie tight end Mark Andrews for the Ravens' second score.
That touchdown pass with 8 seconds left in the half made it 28-14. A 55-yard field goal by the best kicker in history, Justin Tucker, pulled Baltimore within 11 going to the fourth quarter. And then things really got interesting when the Ravens scored again.
Shotgun snap. Here they come. Flacco flings it toward the end zone, and it is hauled in. Was he in bounds? No signal yet. And it is apparently a touchdown. The nearest official never gave a touchdown signal, but John Brown caught it and is celebrating.
Why is it so hard for some official to put their arms in the air? In any case, the Ravens failed on a 2-point conversion try and trailed by 5 with 9.5 minutes to go. That was as close as Baltimore would get. A field goal by Randy Bullock pushed the lead back to 8, and then safety Sean Williams, who was ejected last week in Indy, helped put the game away.
Flacco waiting for the shotgun snap, catches the ball, rolling out to the right, being chased, now looking, still looking, cocks the arm, hit from behind, the ball is loose, the Bengals pounce on it,
Sean,
at the 28-yard line, it's a fumble,
Sean,
and the Bengals have the ball.
Sean Williams
with a hammer to the arm of Joe Flacco.
The Bengals recovered at the Baltimore 29, ran it 3 times to kill some clock, and called on Randy Bullock for the clincher.
The snap, the put down, the spin of the laces, the kick. The distance is good. The kick is good.
Yeah.
And that should be coffin nails.
Bam, bam, bam.
The final score for the second straight week, 34-23 in favor of the Bengals. Here are Dalton and Eifert on the win.
You know, just from a communication standpoint and guys being on the same page of what they were doing, it's big versus that defense where their front's really good and all the blitzes that they throw at you. You got to be prepared for it. And on a short week, I thought we did a great job. And, to come out of a game like that, not get sacked versus that defense is it's a big thing. And I thought our guys played really good up front.
We're in as good of a position as we can be in right now, being 2-0. And just got to keep moving forward and you know, get to 3-0 and then worry about 4-0 and all those types of things. So, just one step at a time.
Time to bring in my broadcast partner, Dave Lapham. 34 points in the first two games of the year. They never scored 34 in a game last year, but to do it against the Baltimore Ravens on a short week, that's an extraordinary offensive performance.
It really is. I mean, a lot of things went well in that football game. Turnovers. The Bengals were plus three. So that stat now holds. They're Marvin Lewis, John Harbaugh matchups. The Bengals, when they're in the plus category, 11-0. So that's big. Red zone. They're 5-for-5 now in the first two games. Five opportunities in the short field, five touchdowns. And they've done it different ways, so with different weapons. Just very impressed. And the other thing is lost players again. Billy Price goes down. Trey Hopkins steps up. I mean, seamless transition. Very long arms, very smart guy, made all the right calls.
Had never played center in a real game in his life.
I know exactly what that feels like. It happened to me. I had to go play center. I'd maybe taken three snaps in practice at center. Blair Bush goes down, got to play center. The only thing you're thinking about is make sure you get the exchange. Trey Hopkins did a great job in that, started watching him early, and I saw he's fine. Everything's going to be good. And he started blocking people, making the calls. I mean, he played very, very well. Next man up, you know, and a lot of guys cramping. Dre Kirkpatrick, I was talking to in the locker room, he said he had the flu this week, so he's losing body fluids and just cramped up, and other guys did. So it was definitely a survival test, really. And the humidity was 100%, still feels like it. It's about 100%. And the Bengals survived. And two wins by double-digit scores. In the NFL, half the games end up, you know, a touchdown or less. So it's pretty impressive.
Lap, let's talk about the game within the game, and that is Andy Dalton forcing the Ravens defensive coordinator Don Martindale to change what he wants to do because of the way he was slicing and dicing the Ravens early in the game.
Don Martindale, during the preseason in the first half of the Buffalo game, he called the dogs off in the second half because they had such a big lead. He just said, let's just go bull rush. You know, let's just get out of this game. And he started subbing people in. But they were 50% blitz, and they were coming in the first quarter against the Bengals. Frank Pollock's got some simple rules, it looked like, you know, and if you execute those rules and have confidence in them, the more complicated the defense tries to get, my experience tells me, the simpler you have to get. Because if you try to have an answer or multiple answers for everything they're doing, my gosh, your head's going to be spinning. So you try to have simple rules to attack a lot of different things, and it looked like that's what was going on out there. They felt very, very comfortable. Andy Dalton was identifying blitz guys. He knew who the one more was coming that they weren't going to be able to block. He knew he was responsible for him, so he was getting the ball away before that guy could do damage. And Don Wink Martindale blinked. He flinched. He didn't just wink. He blinked. And he went to a totally different tactic, and that's a good sign. That really is a good sign.
Let's talk about the performance of Sean Williams, ejected early in the game last week at Indianapolis. Did he come back in a big way tonight? Eight tackles, a sack, a forced fumble, and an interception. It's a heck of a performance by the safety.
Big time, you know, and that's the other thing. In the final stages of the football game, Clayton Fedgelin was the hero last year with the strip sack, or fumble, forced fumble, pick it up and score. This one, Sean Williams comes from the backside, tomahawk chop, sack, strip, ball recovered by Dre Kirkpatrick. I mean, massive when the game's on the line for the defense. We talked about it during the game. They only forced seven fumbles last year and only recovered three of them. Both numbers were dead last in the NFL by a long shot. They've already recovered two. They forced two, and they've recovered both of them. So they're running to the football. A lot of guys are getting involved. It's not just one guy, you know, making plays. And, man, they're only one fumble recovery short of what they had all year last year.
Lap, let's talk about A.J. Green. It seems a little hard to believe. He had never had three touchdown catches in a game. He did it on Thursday night, and he had his third 2 minutes into the second quarter.
I was thinking, if Andy connects eight times, this could be crazy. This could be, you need a calculator. It was a remarkable performance, and the touchdown that he had were, you know, the run after catch. The catch was spectacular. The run after catch was even better than that. And then you figure Baltimore's going to adjust, and they did. They started tilting their coverage toward A.J., and that's where Tyler Boyd stepped up and had his game. Tyler Boyd, six catches for 91 yards and a touchdown himself. Outstanding. Now the Bengals have two Ravens killers. It's not just A.J. Green. It's A.J. and Tyler Boyd. So they've got weapons, Dan. There's no question about it. And Joe Mixon chipped in with his 84 yards rushing on 21 carries, 4 yards a pop. That 21-yard run where he made them pay for over-pursuing was big. So a lot of good things happened in this football game. A lot of good things have happened in the first two football games for sure.
It's interesting with Mixon because 84 yards last year would have seemed like a tremendous game by any Bengals running back. When Joe gets 84, you're kind of like, eh.
Yeah. And, you know, Marvin Lewis, when I talked to him in the post game, he was very pleased with the running game. He said, you know, that's tough sledding. That's a tough group to run the football against. And when they got the lead, you know, it might be a little bit easier to run the football against them. And they averaged almost 4 yards a carry. Joe did average 4 yards a carry as a group. They almost averaged 4 yards a carry. So that's pretty productive. That's pretty efficient against that group up front. They're stout.
Thanks, Lap. Up next, a road game against the Carolina Panthers a week from Sunday. Cam Newton and company beat the Cowboys in week one and have a tough road game in Atlanta this Sunday. Now time for this week's fun fact segment. Bengals president Mike Brown doesn't do many interviews, but he's been kind enough to sit down with me on several occasions, including this conversation I'm confident you will enjoy. Mike, your father went to Miami University and coached at Ohio State, but you went to Dartmouth. Why did you choose the Ivy League?
That is a difficult question for me, even 50-plus years after the fact. I had a friend who went to Dartmouth. He had played quarterback in high school with me. I respected him. He was a very bright kid, and he encouraged me to go to Dartmouth. I looked at Sport Magazine that year for the fall edition that listed all the teams and colleges and their players. It seemed to me that Dartmouth didn't have much at quarterback. So that was very influential in my thinking, believe it or not. And it was totally mistaken, for when I got there, there were two guys who had played on the freshman team and had been unlisted. And they stayed in front of me until my senior year at Dartmouth when I did get to play. But I was very lucky to go there. It was a wonderful experience. I feel a bond with the people that were part of my time, and I'm very sentimental about that. I think of it often these days. We're starting to lose too many of our guys, and that all weighs on me.
When your father decided to get back into the NFL, you were the person that investigated potential expansion cities and helped choose Cincinnati. Was that a slam dunk decision or a close call?
It was a complicated call, not for the reasons that you might think. My father was reluctant. He had been very successful. He knew that if he got back into this, it would be a tough go. They weren't going to give us a fast start. He would have to build from scratch. And that concerned him. He also had real doubts about this being possible. We were in a fight where we were a long shot to get anything. And yet we jumped in. He gave it his best efforts, and we got the franchise, and we got it for Cincinnati. And I pushed for that. He was an Ohio guy. He had roots all across the state. He coached Ohio State. He coached Massillon High School. He went to Miami. His contacts, the people he knew, and the people who knew him were from the state of Ohio. We got political support because of that. There were other reasons, of course, but they knew about my dad. They respected him for what he had done. He carried credibility with them and with the fans in this area. So they joined in support, and it helped. In fact, it made it possible. At the time, when we started here, Cincinnati was something like the 16th largest market in the United States. Today we're probably somewhere around 30th, I'm not sure just where. So we haven't maintained that position. It is an issue with us because when you slip in that way, it's harder to compete. But I'm still pleased that we did what we did, and I'm grateful to the people in this area and in this state who made it possible.
We're doing Fun Facts with Mike Brown. I read Forrest Gregg's biography recently, and he described coming to Cincinnati to interview for the head coaching job. It took place at your father's house, and three people were there: Forrest, your dad, and you. What do you remember about that meeting?
I hate to tell you, nothing. But I remember Forrest so very well. He is a dear friend. When he coached here, we were social friends, Barbara, Forrest, and Nancy and I, and our friends Jack and Lynn Schiff. Would go out every Friday night, and we had wonderful times together. It wasn't anything fancy, but it was just good fun for middle-aged people, which is what we were then. I have a fondness for Forrest that runs deep within me. He was a very successful coach here. He had a presence about him. The players respected him. They jumped when he said boo, and that was good.
I'm glad you mentioned your friendship, because he mentioned something in his book I have a hard time believing. He said the two of you once went to see the movie Porky's. Do you remember that?
I do. It was a lousy movie, in my opinion. Jack Schiff liked it, which I always thought reflected on his standards. But that was the kind of thing that we used to do together, Forrest, Jack, and our wives and me. It was fun.
Do you still get to the movies?
Not so much anymore. I'm so deaf that when I go to the movies, unless it's a French movie with subtitles, I don't do well.
We're doing Fun Facts with Mike Brown. Have you saved any Bengals-related memorabilia over the years?
Not knowingly. That's just the fact. I had the rings from the Super Bowl games. And a couple years ago, I went to look for them, and they were gone. So somehow they flew the coop. I just carry my memorabilia in my mind. Those are memories for me, and that's all I need. A piece of cloth or whatever else doesn't interest me so much as just the wonderful memories I have about all this.
Anthony Munoz was the first and remains the only Bengals player who's gone into the Hall of Fame, at least primarily as a Bengal. But it wasn't a safe pick when you chose him third overall. He didn't play much his junior and senior years at USC due to knee injuries. How much trepidation was there when you made the selection of Anthony Munoz?
Not much. I have this memory about picking Anthony. My dad had a place out in California in La Jolla. That's just north of San Diego, and USC was playing Ohio State. It was the Rose Bowl. Anthony had been hurt that year, but he was healthy by the end of the year and able to play in the Rose Bowl game. And the three of us sat and watched that game, and as it went along, we began to laugh because Anthony was so dominant. He just was remarkable, and he impressed us mightily. George Ballou was our team doctor. We knew that Anthony had had injury problems. George examined him and, to his credit, said, "No, don't worry about it. He's going to be okay for the long run." That was enough for us. We took him, and we got a great, great player. He was as good an offensive lineman as any, not just in his era, but ever. And not only that, he's the kind of guy you wanted on your team. He was a great pick.
We're doing Fun Facts with Mike Brown. Another number three overall selection that didn't work out was Akili Smith. How quickly did you realize he might not have what it takes to make it in the NFL?
For Akili, he had problems that were complicated, and we couldn't solve them. I don't want to get into it beyond that. But he just couldn't figure it out the way it needed to be figured out. We tried, and he tried. To his credit, he gave it his best shot. It just didn't work out. It set us back because without a quarterback in this league, it's making rabbit stew without the rabbit.
Mike, football's your life, but I know from our conversations that you are a big baseball fan. In fact, you were like a kid in a candy store the day Joe Morgan showed up at training camp last year. Do you watch or listen to a lot of baseball?
I do. I'm a big Reds fan. No one knows that or believes it. They wonder why I would be, but I am. I watch almost every Reds game on TV.
Mike, it might also surprise some folks to know that you and Marty Brenneman have struck up a friendship.
I like Marty Brenneman. He's a live wire. You bring him in and he talks freely. He shares his beliefs. He doesn't hold back. He's not afraid. If you don't like it, that's all right with him. And I like that. It's fun being around him. We try to get together once a year, Tom, Marty, and my kids and I. It's a fun lunch when we manage to do that.
All right, one more fun fact for Mike Brown. When Bengals growl plays on the sound system at Paul Brown Stadium after a touchdown, you know what I mean here, that Bengal growling, mean and angry. Do you sing along or hum along?
I can't sing. I can't dance either. But I'm very fond of that song because George Bird wrote it. And George Bird was our entertainment director. That was the title. But he was a neighbor of ours dating back to when I was 5 years old and younger, living in Massillon, Ohio. He was the director of the Massillon High School Band, which was phenomenal. And my dad had real respect for George, and he brought him to Cleveland when we were doing the Browns and then down here. Let me tell you a story about George that always amused me. He would tell the performer, the person who was going to sing the national anthem, to make it at a fast clip. None of this so-called creativity, please. And they would look at him and say, yes, sir, and then go about doing just what they wanted. But he had the answer to that. In those days, we had a band. He directed the band, and he didn't care how they did it. He did it the way he wanted to do it. It went at that pace, and they better keep up or they were left behind. He was a wonderful musician. He wrote that song. I think it's a great song. My wife can sing it. She's pretty musical. She can sing well. I think it's a great song. People can say what they want. Oh, it's corny, they say. To heck with them. It's a great song, and I'm proud of it.
I know our listeners were hoping to hear you sing. Alas, they do not get their wish. Mike, thank you so much for doing this again. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you, Dan.
And that's going to do it for this episode of the podcast. If you haven't done so already, don't forget to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or Podbean, and give it a rating or leave a comment. Your feedback has been extremely helpful, and 5-star ratings help more Bengals fans find this podcast. I'm Dan Hoard, and thank you for listening to the Bengals Booth Podcast.